Good afternoon, and welcome back to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage for the new year. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Ann Guillen. She's a dental hygienist and a prominent national educator on diseases such as dental caries and the disease that causes cavities, and also about other non-carious, non-infectious causes of erosions of the teeth. We're going to be probably trying to focus on these non-infectious causes of erosions of the teeth because we feel like maybe there's less known about this than we need to have, and we want to make sure people understand some other causes of dental problems besides just dental cavities. So why don't you join us as we learn more about these problems that affect us all. To reach us during the day today or during this next hour, you can call us with your questions and comments at 550-8433. That's our local number in Anchorage, 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Ann Guillen is a registered dental hygienist. She's got a master's in public health. She's internationally recognized, as I said, for numerous contributions in dental hygiene and dentistry over the past 40 years. She's not only a practicing clinician, but she also is a columnist and a feature writer and the senior consulting editor for a registered dental hygiene magazine. She's received numerous awards for professional achievement and specifically for advancing the art and science of dental hygiene. And thanks very much for joining us.
Dr. Woodard, thank you, especially for allowing me to share information with the residents of Alaska, one of the most beautiful states in the nation. How would you like to start today?
I think in my promotion of this program on the air, we talked about cavities and the factors that lead to that. But let's as we discussed before, let's talk about other causes of erosions to the teeth that are becoming a very, very important factor, and perhaps more of our listeners need to be aware of. And if the time permits, we'll get back into the caries or the infectious disease that causes it. But I'll also tell our listeners if they have any questions regarding to these either of these issues, you feel free to call and ask questions about. So let's talk about this these non-infectious erosion causes, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm not sure that's the right term.
Well, that's close enough. Everybody's been thinking for years about tooth decay and worried about that. But the whole problem with erosion of solid tooth structure is becoming more and more problematical. The incidence is increasing dramatically. And I coined a term, which I call melting tooth syndrome, to capture and quantify this epidemic. Erosion literally is loss of tooth structure caused by chemical, some type of chemical substance. And bacteria are not necessarily involved with tooth erosion. Bacteria are definitely involved with tooth decay, which is an infectious disease, but erosion is strictly the tooth melting away. And so this is where a lot of interest is coming in dentistry, because melting tooth syndrome can be coupled or separate from the actual caries process. And many different things are involved. For example, we can have extrinsic acid, sources of extrinsic or intrinsic or extrinsic. Intrinsic would be something like stomach acid coming from vomiting, bulimics who self-purge, anorexics often use vomiting as a source of keeping their weight down. People who have chemotherapy have problems often with vomiting, pregnancy. It's estimated that 7% of all adults have daily episodes of gastric esophageal reflux disease, and about a third of the adult population has at least monthly occurrences, and children also suffer from GERD. So this type of tooth erosion is happening strictly from the body purging itself. But more problematical and on the absolute increase, like we've never seen it before, are the attacks to the tooth surface from the foods and drinks we're now consuming. To give you an idea of the problems associated with this. The average American now drinks 100 gallons of soft drinks a year. The average teenage boy drinks 160 gallons. 100 gallons of soft drinks a year is equivalent to 3 bathtubs full of soft drinks. And 10% of all teenage boys drink 7 or more cans a day. 10% of all teenage girls drink 5 or more cans a day. The way we drink drinks is also creating trouble because we sip them. People do what's called swilling. They hold the beverage in their mouth. Children have or often have baby bottles full of soft drinks, sippy cups full of soft drinks. Another source of erosion would be things like cough drops, breath mints, candies, anything that is either this acidic or sugared. All of these types of situations lead to tooth erosion.
So the bottom line, it sounds like you're saying, is that acid affects the enamel on the teeth. Is that the process?
Yes, acid actually affects the enamel on the teeth. In fact, one of the groundbreaking studies that came out in 2004 was done by von Fraunhofer. And von Fraunhofer took little pieces of teeth and weighed them. And he placed individual pieces of teeth in plastic boxes, poured soft drinks over the teeth, changing the soft drinks out twice a day. At the end of 14 days, he weighed the teeth. And they'd used 26 different soft drinks. And what they were looking for was strictly the erosion from the teeth. They're in this study, there's no saliva, there's no bacteria, strictly pieces of teeth and drinks. And amazingly enough, the most erosive soft drink that they studied was Mountain Dew. Didn't make any difference whether it was diet or sugared in this particular study. The erosion was off the charts. And the next most erosive beverage were the clear citrus drinks like Sprite. Arizona iced tea also ranked very high in erosive index. On the flip side, the control for that particular study was water, which basically didn't have any erosive properties, freshly brewed coffee and tea, and two drinks that had extremely low erosive potential were milk, which is not surprising, and A&W root beer. So that's the good news. If you want to drink a soft drink without eroding your teeth, you could consider something like an A&W root beer as a treat.
So I assume that the pH of these products that are bad are low in milk, and hopefully A&W root beer would fit in the not very acidic category?
Actually, okay, milk is much closer to the neutral range, mm-hmm. and it's also liquid food, so it's good nutrition, and it's loaded with calcium, so when you're drinking it, not only are you getting good nutrition, but you're bathing your teeth with calcium, which is very important. A&W root beer, the pH is about 4.5, which is acidic. Mm-hmm. However, there's something about the composition of root beer that doesn't lend itself to the erosive potential. To further complicate this erosion picture, there's two parts to this, not only the type of foods and beverages we're eating and how long our teeth are in contact with them and how many times the frequency of eating. All of this plays into this formula. pH is important, but it's not the only answer. And to give you an example, the next study that I want to talk about was published in 2007. It was Kitchens and Owen took 4 different beverages. And they embedded teeth in little blocks of acrylic with the top portion of the tooth being open to the environment. They painted half the tooth with red nail polish, and the other half was freely exposed to the drinks. Again, they put the little teeth in individual boxes and changed the beverages out twice a day, again for 14 days. They studied 4 drinks. One was Coke, Diet Coke, Gatorade, and Red Bull. So they do 4 different drinks, 2 carbonated soft drinks, 1 sports drink, and 1 energy drink. And over the period of four, with the control being tooth exposed only to water, again, no bacteria, no saliva, just teeth and drinks. And amazingly enough, the Coke, even though it's 10 times more acidic than Red Bull, and it did have some erosion to the teeth, the 14-day exposure to Red Bull literally stripped the enamel off the tooth completely. And the Gatorade took almost all the enamel off and demineralize the remaining portion of the enamel. So the problem is many drinks now, like, say, the sports drinks and energy drinks, have multiple organic acids, where something like Coke, Dr. Pepper, they have the carbonated water, which is an acid, and phosphoric acid. But energy drinks and sports drinks can have four, five, six types of acid, so it takes much longer for the mouth to go back to neutral. That concept is referred to in science as titratable acidity. And that's the missing portion that people aren't thinking about. Long, other beverages that have long, long titratable acidities are things like grapefruit juice and apple juice. And we've been drinking that, those types of beverages for years. So the question becomes, so now what can you drink? Milk's a good choice. If someone wants a fizzy drink, club soda is an excellent choice. It has a very short titratable acidity as compared to some of the other drinks. So the most dangerous drinks on the market today are the sports drinks, the energy drinks. And you can't overlook things like flavored waters and even squeezing lemon into water. People do it all the time. We've been doing it for years in restaurants. Hmm. It drops the pH of the relative acidity of the water to a very low point.
What are the consequences? I guess the way my mind is running, because this is new information to me, is can a dentist or a hygienist see the evidence of this erosion? If my teeth have that, despite seeing a hygienist pretty regularly, no one's ever said anything to me about it. So I guess the next issue is, even though we can prove it outside of the body, this happens. How often is it happening? How obvious is it? And then there must be hopefully some protective factors in our mouth as well.
Well, you're bringing up a really good point. But even those of us who are wearing high power magnification and illumination to do our clinical work,
mm-hmm.
by the time we start seeing overt erosion, the tooth is already in trouble significantly. And in order to remineralize a tooth, you have to have some tooth structure there. It can't all be like basically melted off. So we're looking for subtle signs like, does a tooth look really dull?
Mm-hmm.
A healthy tooth is going to be very shiny and very reflective, and a tooth that's beginning to have erosion problems is going to have a very dull, chalky-looking surface. A lot of times we can see white spot lesions where there's an area on the teeth that's much whiter and it looks chalky. Another very hidden kind of culprit in this is the whole issue of hypersensitivity, which is becoming much worse. If people have roots that are exposed, then they're subject to hypersensitivity, and the erosion opens up the dentinal tubules on the root of the tooth, creating huge hypersensitivity issues. And many people, the research tells us that about 58% of the population experiences dentinal hypersensitivity. I believe that the number is actually quite a bit higher, and people have just quit bringing the subject up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you treat it? Well, first of all, you have to back off and get rid of why the teeth are melting or eroding so quickly. You have to change your behavioral habits and or dietary habits. And you also need to strategize with your dental professional on some way to remineralize the tooth structure. Fluoride's been used for years as a remineralization tool, but it's well known now in the dental community that calcium and phosphate-containing products are also important as well. So it's a combination of fluoride to make a stronger tooth structure, but the original tooth structure, which is calcium and phosphorus, has to be in the mix as well. And there's a number of prescription paste that people can use on a regular basis to remineralize tooth structure. Another very important part of this problem of erosion and hypersensitivity is dry mouth. And when I graduated from college 41 years ago, dry mouth, or what's also known as xerostomia, was not a huge issue. And it's become an enormous problem for people everywhere. It's triggered by anything from alcohol consumption, coffee drinking. There's over 1,000 medications that contribute to dry mouth. People with autoimmune disorders can have dry mouth. So it's a very, very complicated problem, but when the mouth is dry, people tend to want to drink more. The acid works at a much more accelerated rate, and then there are bacteria in your mouth that like producing acid. They're called acidogenic bacteria, and when the mouth is dry, they're quite happy because you've now given them a playing field where they can produce more acid. And then that also allows the bacteria that can live in acid to proliferate. So the decay and the erosion issue get a little intermixed and kind of coming mm-hmm. backwards. Mm-hmm. And how many patients have dry mouth? I'm sure in your mm-hmm. own practice, I know you're very interested in asthma and allergies, mm-hmm. and a lot of the medications that people with asthma and allergies take cause a lot of dry mouth issues.
Yeah, we probably don't ask about it enough, to be honest with you. You know, it's one of the benefits of this program is to learn some areas and issues that I'm not aware of and need to be more aware of, and this seems like one for sure.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is that research indicates that most people are not aware of diminished salivary flow rates until they've lost at least half of their salivary flow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big loss. And it another thing that happens with dry mouth is people end up waking up a lot of times at night just to get their mouths more moist. And if people aren't sleeping all through the night, that's a quality of life issue and doesn't lend itself to good health. So adequate salivary flow is a quality of life issue around a lot more than just the dental health. So I bet your next question is going to be, so saliva is that important? How do we make more of it?
Yeah, let me take 1 second to remind our listeners where they are and what we're doing. And you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. My guest today is Ann Guion. She's a dental hygienist and a prominent national educator. We're talking right now about chemical erosion, particularly acidic type. Ann has discussed is titratable acid in many of the beverages that we eat, as well as some of the physical problems that some of us may have, including GERD or gastroesophageal reflux disease, which puts acid back up into the mouth at times and into our teeth. And also we're talking about how dry mouth can affect things. And so if you've got questions or comments about what you're hearing today, let me remind you there are a couple of ways to get in touch with us over the next 45 minutes or so. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, and continue on your thought because I think it's reasonable. I'm thinking what's the protective effects, and saliva seems to be one of them, and so we need to do something to generate that saliva more.
Well, let's talk, before I talk about how to generate it, let's talk just a moment about what does saliva really do for us? You know, those of us in the dental field, we love spit. The rest of the world doesn't. But we understand it's a magic fluid. It contains digestive enzymes. It helps us chew. It helps things be more comfortable. And it also, there are ways to test people's saliva. In other words, everybody's saliva has a pH or a relative acidity or alkalinity. And the average person, we're striving for a pH of between 6.8 and 7.2. But there are actually tests where we can look at someone's saliva and determine if they have an acidic pH. Some people do. Some people have a very low salivary flow rate. So if you don't have a neutral pH, if you don't have enough saliva, those are both problems. But what if it can't buffer or neutralize acids? Saliva is built to neutralize acids, and it does a very wonderful job of doing this as long as you have enough and it's healthy saliva. But there are people who don't have enough buffering capacity, so they can't neutralize the acids that are in their mouth, either, you know, from dietary intake or from vomiting or anything else. So how do we make more? Well, first of all, I think it's important to get saliva tested. And dental offices can do this. There's a specific little test. It takes about 10 minutes to do. can start the test at the beginning of the appointment and have the results right there. The second thing is, how do we, in the world, do we stimulate saliva, or how do we help saliva along? Well, one of the really easy ways to stimulate saliva is chewing gum. And you're going to say, oh my goodness, you have chewing sugar-free gum. Excellent way to stimulate saliva. Even a better approach would be chewing gum with xylitol, and I'm going to come back to xylitol in a moment. But chewing gum just naturally stimulates salivary flow. One can also chew gum that has baking soda in it. So you have, baking soda is a bicarbonate, and it neutralizes as well. But one of the least well-known ingredients that is just catching on like crazy, and I'm so excited to talk about this, is something called xylitol. Xylitol is a natural sweetener. It was found in Finland. When the Finns couldn't get sugar during the war, they turned to birch trees and discovered that a natural sweetener called xylitol could be made from birch trees. And xylitol has virtually just magical properties. One of them is it will stimulate salivary flow rate. Another very big benefit of xylitol is that it helps neutralize the pH. Xylitol also makes the surfaces of teeth slick, so it's harder for plaque biofilm to stick. Xylitol also breaks up the slimy mass of biofilm. You know, when you go to your dental office and they talk about plaque on your teeth, the soft plaque, it is a slimy biofilm mass, and xylitol inhibits the formation of biofilm on teeth, doesn't allow it to stick as well. It also helps increase the calcium and phosphorus concentrations in the saliva, which is used to naturally remineralize. So there's all kinds of products nowadays that are made with xylitol. There's loads of over-the-counter products. You can find it in little slow-release lozenges. You can find it in mints, chewing gum. And it has to be one of the first three ingredients in the chewing gum, by the way, or the mints. It's in toothpaste. It's in mouth rinses. Dental professionals use products now that contain xylitol. So xylitol is gaining lots and lots of traction in our understanding of how to interfere with Mother Nature's destructive biofilm on teeth and create more what we call in the biological homeostasis, or a real even playing field, which doesn't fit, you know, favoring healthy organisms in the mouth. Xylitol also cannot be metabolized by strep mutans, which is one of the biggest culprits in the tooth decay arena. It's not the only culprit, but one of the major acid producers. Now, I want to tell you the downsides of xylitol. They're very small, but you need to know about them. The human body does make xylitol, but not enough. So when someone begins using xylitol, they need to use it gradually. The ideal is to work yourself up to using xylitol at least 3 times a day, 3 to even as high as 8 times a day. But you need to do it gradually because since our bodies don't make a lot of it, it can initially cause GI tract distress if you were to say, go from no xylitol to 8 sticks of gum a day. You know, immediately. Mm-hmm. So you'd want to work this gradually over a period of a couple of weeks. And the second downside to xylitol is that dogs and ferrets are very attracted to the sweetness of xylitol, but they can't metabolize it. So if they get into a xylitol-containing product, it can be a fatal episode for those two pets. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to mention one more good thing about xylitol. It's the same sweetness as sugar, but it has half the calories of sugar. It has a very low glycemic index, which is incredibly important for people who are pre-diabetic or diabetic.
So I was aware of the xylitol association with somewhere in Scandinavia. I couldn't remember if it was Sweden or Finland, where it's really been very popular, and I think also gaining quite a bit of popularity in Europe. But it seems like I don't hear that much about it in the United States. Are we behind in our understanding of the benefits?
Well, the driving research within the xylitol world has been in Scandinavia. It started in Finland, and then the Swedes are just famous for their elegant research in that arena, and as well several others. But there's a lot of work being done about xylitol, a lot of discussion in the dental community now, and particularly one of the major researchers in the U.S. is at the University of Washington, Dr. Milgram. Then there's a whole group of thought leaders and researchers and speakers and writers that are working on a concept called CAMBRA. It's caries managed by risk assessment, and what has been figured out is there's only so many manpower hours and only so many so many dollars and so many hours in the day. So the idea now is to evaluate patients individually for their risk factors, and if someone has high risk factors, then xylitol is definitely recommended. So the dental community is starting to address things this way, and I think you'll see more and more work on xylitol. I think people who are really interested in reestablishing homeostasis or a balance in their own bodies, people who are interested in natural foods and in health foods, the discussion of xylitol is ramping up in that community as well.
You know, everything has some has side effects. It doesn't sound like there's a very significant. I can understand the need to be slow with any carbohydrate source as the enzymes in your intestinal tract. If they're overwhelmed, you'll get diarrhea, which I assume is the problem with xylitol.
Also, you get diarrhea and gas.
Yep.
You will know it if you've had too much. But for example, I use xylitol extensively now, and as a speaker, I use a product which has a stick-and-stay property, and I put little xylitol tablets right above my molars, just opposite the salivary gland, to stimulate saliva, because when you do a six-hour presentation, you're going to have a dry mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I also take some medications that cause dry mouth. So I put in two xylitols in my own mouth every 2 hours while I'm speaking. I sleep with it every night, and the result is I don't wake up with a dry mouth at night, but I have slobber all over the pillow. I don't care. I can wash the pillowcase. It makes more sense than waking up unnecessarily. You can definitely build a tolerance to this, but you just have to do it gradually and keep it away from the pets. So
we're about halfway through, Ann. What I need to do is take a short break, and then we'll come back.
Sure.
I have a couple more questions about the xylitol issue, and I want listeners to feel free to give us a call about any questions they have as well. So let me remind everybody, this is Line 1, your health connection in Anchorage. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll continue to discuss these oral health issues with Ann Guion, a dental hygienist and a prominent national educator. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Back with Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Ann Guion. She's a dental hygienist and a national educator on dental cavities, dental caries, and other factors that affect the mouth. In fact, we spent the first half of the program on chemical causes of erosion of the teeth, which includes mostly acidic kinds of beverages, a lot of which we are drinking in large amounts in the United States at this time. and also some medical problems that may contribute to that, some of the medical diseases that may cause dry mouth or medications that do it, as well as something like gastroesophageal reflux, which puts some acid into the stomach. And all this causes erosions of the teeth, which can lead to some long-term problems. And we've Ann has talked a little bit about some of the preventative factors, and she's mentioned that this can be a very hard process to detect early. And when it's late, we need to ask her, but I think it might be once it's really late, it may be difficult to do much about. She mentioned that when we've lost certain amounts of teeth structure, there's no way to get that mineralization back. And we've most recently been talking about xylitol as a very effective and pretty safe medication, it's over the counter in gums and mints and so forth, that does seem to do a lot of what we need to protect the oral health of our mouth. So if you've got questions or comments, let me remind you again, line1@alaskapublic.org is our email address. Our number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And the general reminder, if you're listening between 7 and 8 on Monday night, you're listening to a recorded broadcast. And we won't be able to take your phone calls or emails. Ann, did I give a pretty good overview?
You did. And as you were talking, I was making a couple more notes that I wanted to address. First of all, you and I know how to spell xylitol, and you do too because you've seen my notes. But your listening audience is probably going, what the heck is xylitol, and how do you spell it?
Okay.
Well, xylitol is spelled X-Y-L-I-T-O-L.
Okay.
It is a cousin of other naturally occurring sweeteners like sorbitol and mannitol. It's called a polyol, and it's a 5-carbon sugar versus something like table sugar is a 6-carbon sugar. So it's X-Y-L-I-T-O-L. And you could just do Google search and find loads of information about xylitol. I found a couple of websites there as well. Something I wanted to mention in when I'm doing courses around the country, and I was just so fortunate to do a program for the Alaska Dental Hygienists Association on November 5th, as well as to speak to the students at the university. And when I was up there, we measured the pH of a wide variety of drinks during my course. And one of the real shocking things that always comes out is I bring in a number of brands of bottled water. And there are quite a few brands where the pH is 5 to 5.5. Now, why is this important? This is important because the enamel on the crown of the tooth can withstand an acid attack as low as 5.5. So that maybe the enamel might be affected a little bit, but it's going to take a long time as compared to a soft drink. If the enamel is fortified with fluoride, the pH can go as low as 4.5. But lots of people have lots of exposed root structure. Unlike when I graduated from college where many people didn't have posterior teeth, people now have most of their natural dentition. But a lot of people have root exposure from periodontal disease, clenching, grinding, activities like that. The root of the tooth will start melting, literally, when the pH goes below 6. So I think it's very important, if you're going to be drinking bottled water, to test the pH, and you can get simple pH strips that, you know, it's the same thing as little strips that you would test urine with or pool water or anything like that. It's a simple test to look at what the pH is.
Okay.
So there are definitely bottled water brands of bottled water that don't have an acidic pH and others that do. Most of the tap water in the United States falls within a neutral range. So I wanted to bring that out. I'm not for or against bottled water. I'm for being aware of what the pH is. And many of the purified waters are municipal waters that have been treated, and they tend to be, from what I've seen, the purified bottled waters tend to be the ones that are in the 5 to 5.5 range.
All right, we've got several callers, so I want to take a couple of the phone calls, and let me spell xylitol again. It's X-Y-L-I-T-O-L, X-Y-L-I-T-O-L. All right, Nicole, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi there. I was wondering, just this past fall, I discovered I have oral allergy syndrome to plums, which is related to a birch allergy. And I assume that's just because I moved to Alaska 7 years ago where there's birch trees. But since I'm maybe allergic to things that are derived from birch or birch tree related, would I be concerned that I would be allergic to xylitol?
Let me try to answer that. I'm assuming you may not feel comfortable with the answer to that one, Anne.
Well, I'll let you answer it, and then I'll start a little sidebar.
All right. So the oral allergy syndrome is not rare, and it's particularly common in Alaska. And you're right, Nicole, that people who are allergic to birch can develop an antibody that may cross-react with proteins as a general rule in fruits, and peaches, plums, prunes, and they get an itching in their mouth. It's rarely dangerous, and I would hazard the guess, since xylitol is a carbohydrate, that it is probably not much a risk from being allergic. But let me see what Anne has to say.
Well, I'm not going to address the allergy issue, but what I'm going to tell you, it's Nicole. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Nicole. It was originally xylitol was found in birch trees, but it also can be made from corn cobs. So if you have concern about this, and I would encourage you to contact the manufacturers of xylitol products to find out what their source of xylitol is. So it's not just birch trees at all.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, but generally, just to be clear, most of the allergens are proteins. They can, on rare occasions, be carbohydrates, but generally, so it wouldn't be. So I think the likelihood is pretty low, Nicole.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. Okay, let's take another call. See if we got John on 4. John, what can we do for you? John, you still there? All right. Let's take April. April, you're in Palmer. What can we do for you?
Hi. I was just listening to your show, and it's very informative, and I appreciate you people being on. And I just wanted to make the comment that way back in sixth grade, a long time ago, my teacher, Mrs. Bigger from Rochester, New York, did that experiment with the vials and the teeth and the soda pop, and it sure opened a lot of our eyes. We didn't drink soda for a long time after that. And
well,
I think wanted to comment that I appreciate you being on and on all your information.
Thanks very much for your call, April.
April, I think that's a very common science experiment in grade schools and one that leaves a lasting impression. And it's too bad that people aren't seeing more of that nowadays, because it's certainly, April, I'm going to make the giant quantum leap that you and I were probably raised at about the same era. We didn't have a lot of soft drinks.
66 is when that was, 66, 67 when I was in sixth grade. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay, I've got you. Let's see, about that time for me, too. We weren't unless you were fabulously wealthy or had parents that were let you do whatever you wanted to, I bet your parents didn't let you have very many soft drinks. And today's kids.
Very, very rare.
Yeah.
Very rare.
That's where the problem has come, is the frequency and the quantity of the consumption. And just as a little sidebar, people always ask me about expensive dentistry. And I say, you know, just think back. If you quit buying all of these expensive drinks that are producing dramatic effects on your health, not only your teeth, but on weight loss, for every 12 cans of soda pop you drink, you've earned enough calories to gain a pound.
Yeah.
So you've got all these issues surrounding this, people spending all this money. And in today's economy, you know what? There's cheaper beverages that are safer, and will keep the money in your pocketbook.
I think that's a great idea. And, again, I thank you for all your information.
Oh, you're welcome.
You will help a great many generations, I'm sure. And I hope you have a great week.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, April. Alberta, you're on line one. Alberta, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got it. What I'm calling about is if Anne has any experience, if you have any experience with the Kangen water, K-A-N-G-E-N water, that is being made by a machine that does other things with the water too, but that one of the things it does is produces a drinking water that's 9.5 pH.
You know, I've read about it, and I haven't experienced it myself, so I really am not in a position to comment on it.
Okay.
Other than it wouldn't be erosive. That would be the only thing that I could think of, you know.
The what?
It would not be erosive at 9.5 because it's alkaline, so it's not going to be damaging to surfaces.
Right. No, that's I'm thinking about it actually helping with a lot of health issues, a lot of which are from the pH, our body pH being too low. And this is one way to bring it up. And I guess there's been really a lot of success. The technology is quite, you know, 25 years old or something. It's a machine that from Japan that's used. And the acidic, it has an, you can make really acidic water for cleaning and then a higher pH water for other things too, besides the regular drinking water. All right, well, I recommend you research it. I'm researching it myself.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
What about the use of xylitol in, let's say, people who have, you know, there are people that have silent or reflux, gastrointestinal or GERD stands for gastroesophageal reflux disease, whereas reflux is a normal, common consequence. So disease to me indicates that there's abnormal processes. You know, you may have cough, you may have problems with your teeth, obviously, as we just discussed. Can xylitol be used effectively to help prevent problems with the teeth in those people who have significant reflux, even if they don't have other symptoms, for example?
Well, of course, because you're getting the acid in the mouth, and so this is, can help combat the acid by increasing the pH, stimulating the natural salivary flow, and if it's healthy saliva, you're going to get remineralization just from the healthy saliva. And it also keeps the plaque biofilm from sticking to the teeth, so I don't see any reason not to use it.
Okay. Is there, can you compare the effectiveness of xylitol for this particular problem as compared to, say, brushing your teeth twice a day and flossing? I mean, are there comparative studies that show one is, you know, significantly better than another, or are they equal or not as effective? Or?
I don't know of any studies, but I'm going to say right now, the question you're posing to me in my mind as a dental professional is you're asking to compare apples to oranges.
Okay.
But let me preface it. I just had a thought that came into my mind. The many people after some type of acid attack on their teeth, it's particularly true for people who are vomiting a lot, want to go and brush their teeth immediately to get rid of the horrible taste. It's one of the most dangerous things they can do for their teeth because now the teeth are pre-softened. So this, on a microscopic level, the structure of the teeth is soft. Mm-hmm. They go in there with a brush.
Right.
And that creates tremendous problems. For that type of situation, you'd want to somehow neutralize the acid. You could be, chewing gum with baking soda in it, rinsing with baking soda and water, using baking soda toothpaste, just a little dab and swishing the toothpaste around in your mouth.
What about just rinsing your mouth with water several times?
It's not going to neutralize it enough.
Ah, okay.
But the acid, you need something more profound to tie that up. But rinsing with water is okay, but you really need to bring a buffer into it. And a fast buffering is a bicarbonate, and sodium bicarbonate or baking soda.
All right, we have another caller. Yeah, sure. Let's take Fred. You're on line one.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a quick question about if you could comment on the relationship between phosphorus and vitamin D. We hear so much in the news about vitamin D and the importance of having vitamin D in our overall diet. But, you know, with vitamin D giving bone structure and then, you know, your teeth, being very much related to bone structure, the issues with vitamin D supplements, if there's any recommendation or any research or knowledge that you have about that, would be most appreciated.
Okay. So you're kind of asking if vitamin D would help also protect teeth from some of these injuries we've been talking about?
Correct.
Okay.
Dr. Woodard, I'm going to defer to that question because I don't feel like I have a knowledge base that could answer that accurately at all.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that I can answer it either, other than to say that I don't recall anything that I have read. And the, you know, as Fred's implied, there's a tremendous amount of information about and concern about lower vitamin D levels in the population as related to and does supplement help teeth, or does a lower level cause more more tooth problems? The principal source of vitamin D is sunlight. It's hard to get it with foods other than oily fish, and unfortunately we're spending a lot more time indoors, not very much time outdoors, and when we go outdoors we cover our skin, which all affects it. And so that's all leads to the low vitamin D level, Fred, and that's I can't say that I know anything about the protective effect of normal levels on teeth, though.
There's a condition called XLH. It's an abbreviation, an acronym for X-linked hypophosphatemia, mm-hmm. and it involves it's not rickets,
mm-hmm.
Vitamin D deficiency rickets. It's a condition where the body doesn't process phosphorus and vitamin D correctly. Therefore, it leads to bones, brittle bones,
yep.
and subsequently the teeth and the dentin in the teeth. I personally have had over about every tooth in my head has had a root canal. I've had re-root canals and epicoectomies, and I'm facing oral surgery right now with here and. Anchorage because of through no fault of my own. I've had, you know, lots of dental care throughout my life. I've been very fortunate to have regular checkups,
right.
and, you know, the whole orthodontic thing, the braces, and I even have a child who also has this condition, and it's very rare. Again, it's XLH is the
right.
abbreviation.
Right.
And Google search that. You'll come up with, there has been some research and at Duke and Yale and Indiana University and in Purdue University in Indianapolis,
right.
regarding the link, the causal link between, you know, not having the phosphorus and the
mm-hmm.
calcium
mm-hmm.
and the vitamin D and the dental nightmare,
mm-hmm.
The dental meltdown, have you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's systemic. That's mm-hmm. something that not happening to us, but to other people throughout the world who have this. I know that because of a listserv that I'm on of people who suffer mm-hmm. from XLH, and it's very debilitating, mm-hmm. not only with your mouth but also with your other your bones.
Right. I certainly don't know much specifically about that, but, you know, now that you say that, I think I was wrong in saying I think there is an association between some of the vitamin D deficiencies
mm-hmm.
and tooth problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am not enough of a expert on it to tell you, but you're jogging my memory in a way there, Fred. So
I really appreciate your time. I won't
yep.
pick up any more, and I thank you
right.
for considering this question.
All right. Wish I could help you more.
Yep. Keep up the good work. Thank
All
you
right.
Very much.
Thanks, Fred. We just have 10 minutes or so. And what do you want to do now? I think it would help to summarize and go over what you've said so far briefly, and then perhaps maybe we could talk a little bit about some protective issues and things we ought to be doing to protect ourselves from some of these infectious causes of tooth decay, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, you know, what came to my mind is a note I'd written, and it says there's a little phrase we use in dentistry, and it goes like this. There's no dentistry, not no dentistry. In other words, you know, if we're really doing our job, then we're not going in and doing what people think of as traditional dentistry, which is the drilling and filling approach, which in the dental world is now being referred to as tooth amputation. And when you're drilling away, you're amputating a portion of the body, and which is
mm-hmm.
not going to regenerate. So I think the goal, if I had to summarize this up, would be to increase people's awareness that acidic beverages are in food intake. Frequency is highly problematic. Oh, I want to throw in a really nice little thing about talking about prevention. using a straw goes a long way to these beverages not attacking the teeth. It's not the sole answer, but it's a quick and easy thing to do. Also, to avoid drinking, sipping, and all this type of activity between meals, if you want to have a beverage like this, have it during a meal when you're going to have proteins, because proteins will bind acid. Even things like eating a smaller piece of cheese after an acidic beverage will bind up the acid, or even chocolate, because chocolate is protein. So those are all some kind of fun ways to help reduce the effect. So controlling the frequency, the amount of acidic beverages, working towards remineralization, we can work with fluorides, we can use the xylitol, various methods of xylitol. We can strive towards building more and healthier saliva. And so I think this is all a more proactive, preventive approach than waiting until things fall apart and then you're hitting the drill and fill routine. And I think that I would encourage your audience members to have these discussions with their dental professionals, because we're very rich resources of information. We go way past teeth and gums. We know a lot about general health and nutrition, and we can steer you into good ideas on better oral health as well, which is a foundation for better overall health.
Are these drinks, I'm thinking about labeling facts now. There's really nothing on any of the drinks that tell you what the pH of those beverages are.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. And a little quick way to really analyze in a drink, if you see the term citric acid, beware. You know right up there that you've got an acid problem. Citric acid is a weak organic acid, but it chelates calcium, in other words, it grabs the calcium molecule and won't let go of it. So it's highly erosive. Phosphoric acid is in all the brown drinks. The carbonated water is an acid. You'll see the term benzoic acid for as a preservative. Then if you see words that end with A-T-E, like citrate, see if I can recall this really quickly. I have a slide looking at Mountain Dew. I can call that up really quickly, but it has 5 organic acids in Mountain Dew. It has orange juice, sodium citrate. It has carbonic acid. So start looking. Any word that ends with A-T-E, you've got an acid on your hands. And when you have multiple organic acids, that's where the problems get really complicated.
Let me briefly be a devil's advocate again. If we're talking about acids and things you put in your mouth, there's a large amount of mouthwash being used today, I'm guessing, given my own house and teenagers. What about mouthwashes? Pro, con?
Oh, you know what? I'm glad you asked that question. First of all, most mouthwash is literally covered under the cosmetic laws in terms of its content. It's really kind of like putting lipstick on. It's, as you have a very famous resident in your state, lipstick on a pig, if I remember her comment. No, it's like lipstick. It's cosmetic for the most part. Now, there are mouthwashes that have therapeutic value. We've got over-the-counter mouthwashes, and we've got, or mouth rinses, and we've got prescription. In the over-the-counter arena, you have mouth rinses that claim to whiten teeth. You have mouth rinses that claim to freshen breath. You have mouth rinses that contain fluoride. And the mouth rinses with essential oils, the Listerine type of products, definitely have a short-term effect on killing oral bacteria or modifying the oral bacteria for a short period of time. The prescription mouth rinses with fluoride in them are much stronger. The prescription mouth rinses that kill bacteria are much stronger and are used for very short, brief periods of time. But if you want it, if you're really getting at the bad breath issue, which is, I think, where your teenagers are worried about, removing plaque biofilm effectively from the mouth on a regular basis goes a long way to eliminating bad breath. And one of the most underlooked, or one of the most areas that's where the least attention is paid to, is the tongue. tongue is like a shag carpet. And there are little tongue cleaners that you can get out there, little tongue scrapers. If you start using one regularly, you'll be shocked at what comes off your tongue in the way of bacteria. That is also populating the entire mouth for either decay, periodontal disease, or bad breath. Did that answer your question?
Not entirely. What about the pH of those over-the-counter preparations?
You know, I have never measured the pH, and so I'm going to whip out my pH paper tonight. Oh, my God, Dr. Woodard, this is a new arena for me. Thank you.
That's what I was kind of wondering about.
I'm excited that you brought that up because I will present that to my audience at the Chicago Midwinter Dental Meeting this coming month. A new activity. I've never measured it.
Hmm.
You know, that's interesting because you're looking into my world, and I'm so close to it that I never thought about that.
All right. Well, we're in our last minute and a half or so. What do you want us to remember about this program that we won't forget and take home and use?
What I want your audience to remember is I never said never drink a soft drink. I really, you know, they're part of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, gallons every day, all day long, no, not a great idea. So to use these things wisely and have fun with them. So, by the way, beer has a more neutral, it doesn't have a neutral pH, but wine is much more acidic than beer. Little fun fact. And white wine is more acidic than red wine. Another fun fact. And the drier the wine, the more acidic the wine. So not soft drinks, but just more information about drinks.
All right. So we need to be careful what we're putting in our mouth, particularly those acidic things, and brushing our teeth, and then thinking about using some xylitol.
I think you've summed it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much for allowing me to spend time with you and all the wonderful people in Alaska.
All right. Well, we really appreciate your taking the time to be with us today. My guest was Anne Guillon. She is a national educator and dental hygienist, and she joined us today by phone from Houston. Thanks again, Anne.
Thank you.
If you'd like to continue today's conversation, I want to remind everyone you can join KSKA on Facebook. You can find links to our new website, alaskapublic.org. If you would like to, we're going to be back next Monday, January 16th at 2 p.m. And in this time, we're going to continue in the gastrointestinal track, but much more involved with pediatric gastrointestinal specialist Dr. Claire Wilson and Greg Szymanczyk. They're both pediatric gastroenterologists in Anchorage. We'll be discussing problems like celiac disease, food allergy, gastroesophageal reflux disease, which is commonly referred to as GERD, and other topics that you, the listeners, may choose to discuss. So why don't you join us and learn more Monday, January 6th at 16th at 2 p.m. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Dave Waldron today served as our audio engineer. Thanks for listening, and especially to those of you who took the time to call. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.